Yeah, I want to thank the organizers for inviting me to this very interesting workshop. Many of the papers that I'm going to be talking about today can be downloaded from my website, which is very easy to remember, cherrypit.princeton.edu. Let me just tell you the essence of the talk I'm going to give today. It can be described very simply. What I first want to be able to do is I want to be able to categorize static packings. And what I'm going to introduce is an idea that I call jamming, applied to hard spheres. So it's used in a somewhat different way than when you have soft interactions. And as Paul said, we don't have friction in the problem. We don't have gravity in the problem. This is just going to be the simple hard sphere model. But yet, we're going to see there are many, many interesting questions that remain open. And so, the one thing that I want to impress upon you is the idea of jamming, which has to do with rigidity. And then the other idea that I want to impress upon you is an order metric that enables us to characterize the degree of order or disorder of the system. Now, with those two ideas, once I can classify packings with those two ideas, then I will show you that we can regard a number of different interesting packings, including disordered ones, as optimal particle packings. And then after we have this classification scheme, we can begin to ask interesting questions about what properties these systems have. Okay, so Paul convinced you that this is a good model for a lot of systems. Jamming, as I'm going to be talking about, really is a non-equilibrium idea. It's intimately related to rigidity transitions in granular media and dynamical arresting glasses. And as Paul emphasized, and I'm going to emphasize, hard sphere problems are ancient and very hard. Okay, so the outline of the rest of my talk. First of all, is random close packing, the idea that Bernal introduced, well-defined? Then I will speak about order metrics, optimal packings, jamming ideas, to jam or not to jam, how we can actually test that, characteristics of the MRJ state, maximally dense particle packings. So now we're going to go from presumably disordered packings to ordered packings. But then the last thing, if I have time, I want to say something about very high dimensions. And there is a problem due to Minkowski 100 years ago that we believe we've cracked. Okay, so here's a situation where a physicist actually can teach a mathematician something. Okay, I'm not going to use the Bernal quote because Paul quoted it very well. As you know, okay, so the idea is that you take a particle packing, you shake it up until it densifies. And so the 50-year-old view, probably more than 50 years old, is that random close packing corresponds to the state of maximum density, the maximum density that a random collection of spheres can attain, and it's thought to be a universal quantity. In three dimensions, around 64%. In two dimensions, it's been said, and this is quoted throughout the literature, it's around 82%. I'm going to show you this is absolute nonsense in a little while. And I'm going to show you that there is something to this number, but it doesn't really have to do with random close packing. Okay, the problem is, first of all, in saying that this is random close packing, you never told me what you meant by random. So how can I define something called random close packing without defining random? The other thing is, if you think about it, random and the other part of it, close packing, contradict each other. If you think of something that's close packed, you think of something that's maximally coordinated, like a lattice, which is the opposite of random. So these are really contradictory terms. And so what we want to do is we want to be able to quantify randomness, and I'm going to do that with order metrics, and we want to replace the idea of close packing with jamming. So this was the title of a paper of ours. Is random close packing of spheres well-defined? And the answer is no. And I'll spend a little time about this. This is now getting to be old work, but I want to tell you about it because I have to say something about characteristics of these MRJ packings. So, as I said, you do defining order metrics and jamming and generating hard sphere packings via computer simulations in the way that Paul described. To replace this RCP state, we introduce a new concept called the maximally random jam state. Think of something that is jammed, it's constrained to be jammed, but maximally random. And that idea can be made precise. So what I now want to show you is an animation of the algorithm that we use, which is due to Lubashevsky and Stillinger. We've modified it. I really don't want to get into the specifics of that. But what you're going to see, so what happens is you start out particles actually in a Poisson point process, so they're just point particles in the beginning. This is going to be at a much later stage, so that I'm not going to bore you with all of the collisions. But this is going to be an MD simulation with a twist. The particles are going to grow as a function of time. Okay? And depending upon how fast I do this expansion, the final state will be different. If I do it very quickly, I tend to get things that are random. If I do it very slowly, then I get things that are ordered. And in fact, I can get FCC if I do it slowly enough. So this is what it looks like. Okay, and this happens to be a rapid expansion, and it's going to end up with something that's disordered and jammed. Okay, now I have to define these jamming categories. This was done with Frank Stillinger. The simplest one, this is going to be a hierarchical set of categories, starting with the simplest, least stringent, locally jammed. Each particle in the system is individually jammed, which means you have to have a minimum of D plus one contacts, while fixing the positions of the remaining particles. If all of the particles are locally jammed in that sense, then the system is locally jammed. So that's the simplest category. Then collectively jammed is a system that is locally jammed in which no subset of the particles can be continuously displaced so that its members move out of contact with the remainder set. Now, I know I've said that fast, so I'm going to show you an animation that illustrates this very well in a second. So you can have collective motions. Something that is strictly jammed is collectively jammed plus. It disallows all uniform volume non-increasing deformations, which include volume-preserving deformations. So in other words, I can't shear it. It's collectively jammed, and I can't shear it. I can't compress it. I can't do anything like that to the system. Now, of course, as I expand from locally jammed to strictly jammed, I restrict the range of densities that I can achieve. In fact, in the case of something that's locally jammed, you might guess that I could have systems with very low densities, as I'll show you. Of course, boundary conditions matter whether or not it's periodic or hard wall. This is going to illustrate a program that we have developed that I'm going to describe in a second. But this is actually a computer, a linear program that finds unjamming motions. And so this is the honeycomb lattice, and you see that each particle has the requisite number for local jamming, 3. The blue particles are fixed, so you can think of that as a hard wall container. And the program is going to find an unjamming motion. You're going to think, the hand of God is going to come in and turn, and do a turn of some subset of the particles, and it'll lead to unjamming. And here is the hand of God coming in and rotating that. That'll unjam. So this is not collectively jammed. It is locally jammed. Okay. Now, having defined those ideas, let me now tell you how you can view optimal packings in this very general setting. So I'm going to call this an order map. Now, I haven't said anything about the order metric, okay, for the moment. And I'm probably not going to say much about it during the talk. If you want to discuss it, that's fine. Psi is going to be some my favorite order metric, and it's going to be a parameter that goes between 0 when it's completely disordered, like an ideal gas, and 1 when it's completely ordered, like the FCC crystal. So imagine a scalar that goes between 0 and 1. On the horizontal axis, I plot the packing fraction. You could take all possible hard sphere configurations and plot it in this diagram. Some of those are not going to be jammed. But a subset will be jammed, and that's the envelope that encloses the jam states. And here are the three interesting points on this diagram that enables you to think about this really as an optimization problem. Okay, the jam state of maximal density, okay, which is the FCC, so 74%, order metric 1. A is another interesting point, which is the jam state of minimal density. Now, I should remark that this diagram is schematic, obviously, and it will change depending upon the jamming category. So if it's local jamming, or collective jamming, or strict jamming, this will change. And just as a side point, it turns out you can get vanishingly small densities that are locally jammed, as it turns out. The answer for collective jamming in 2 and 3 dimensions, what is the lowest density jam state, is not known. And this is the maximally random jam state, that is the lowest state, the state of lowest order in this set of jammed states. And so the MRJ state is then the maximally random jam state is the one that minimizes psi among all jam structures. That's a good question. I'll get into that in a second. And what I'm showing here is the expansion rate, the inverse expansion rate versus volume fraction in these simulations. And so infinite expansion would correspond to 0, right? And you can see that if you do the expansion very rapidly, you get things that are approaching 64%. As you slow it up, you get higher densities, and you could go all the way up to 74%. But that's not that interesting. What is interesting is then we've measured order metrics, to answer your question. This gives you the translational order in the system, okay? This measures bond orientational order in the system. So there's two different order metrics. They positively correlate with each other. And you can see these are the jam states. This is increasing density. In order for me to increase the density, so to go from 64 to 64.5%, say, I have to do it at the expense of disorder. I have to increase the order in the system. Okay, but if I now look at standard metrics to determine whether or not the system is ordered or not, like the pair correlation function, or if I look at scattering data, I see no Bragg peaks. The one at 64.5% looks just as random as the one at 64. So according to the old prescription, you should choose 64.5 because it's higher density. But 65 looks just as disordered as 64.5, so I'll choose 65. Okay, so you can see where this goes. Because you've never told me how much randomness you wanted in the system because, first of all, you didn't quantify it. I didn't know what kind of percentage, of what the proportion of randomness I should choose, and therefore it was totally ill-defined. Yes? Yeah, but probably not now, if I could save that. Yes, you do. That you certainly do, absolutely, in high enough density. This is a description of the linear program problem, which I don't have much time to describe. I just want to tell you about it because if you're ever interested in testing whether or not you have a jam system according to our categories, you could send us a configuration, and we could just test it for you. The basic idea is you look at the contact network of the system. And you can have gaps, because you're not going to necessarily give me a perfect packing. B are the particle loads, delta L are the interparticle gaps. The rigidity matrix is given once you have the contact network. So these are the knowns. The unknowns are the contact forces or the displacements, whichever one you want. And you can formulate, for example, one of the linear programs in the case of displacement as maximizing the displacement over the virtual work, which would be the component of the force in a particular direction that you want to move in, subject to the impenetrability constraint. So this is why it's a linear programming problem. And then there's a dual problem with that. Okay. Now, I'm not going to have time to tell you about this, but the main thing that I want to tell you about is really this fourth point. We did a study where we generated different packings using a wide, diverse number of different protocols. We generated 2,700 different packings. We used several order metrics, and all of the different order metrics pointed, even though they were different, pointed to a consistent estimate of the MRJ packing density, which is 64%. Now, there's a tremendous difference between 3D and 2D. So let me just say something about 2D. If you use the same kinds of protocols in 2D, you only get systems that are collectively jammed at 89%. Now remember, for the 2D system, it's a triangular lattice, which is 91%. So you have a high degree of crystallinity in these systems. And so the idea that you had a random coarse packing state at 82% wasn't even locally jammed, at least in the systems that we could generate. And it illustrates the importance of jamming. It also illustrates the importance of order metrics. And I would say, as opposed to using entropic measures, which would give you most probable states, the most probable state here is a crystal type packing, which is definitely not ordered. Okay, let me say something now about small r behavior. Now, that once we've characterized these MRJ packings, now we can start to examine them. And one of the things that we've done is that we've looked at packings that are infinitesimally close to jamming, because this algorithm that we use we can measure tolerances between the particles that are 10 to the minus 15th times the diameter. Okay, that's the most precise types of jam packings that one can get. And therefore, you can shrink them slightly and then see how the packing, what the limiting process is as you go to jamming. We can determine an analytical relationship between the pair correlation function and the force distribution, where L is simply the gap distance, R minus the diameter of the particle. They're all strictly isostatic. Another point of confusion in the literature was whether or not there was a delta function contribution in the pair correlation function, or whether there was a divergence, and to be able to distinguish between those two. We clearly, what we see, this is the cumulative coordination number, and this is the expected number of particles in a shell of radius r. And this is the coordination, cumulative coordination versus the gap. Look at the scale. You're going 10 to the minus 15th here, 10 to the minus 12, 10 to the minus 9. In this direction, you're going towards jamming. The main point is if you take a derivative of this, you see the delta function very clearly, okay, which is the true contact part, versus this background part, which are the near contacts, which actually have a divergence that I'll just describe here. This part here, which is the background part, there's a divergence with an exponent of minus 0.4, which is different than what people have found for soft interactions. They get 1/2. Okay. Then one other thing that I want to show is long wave density fluctuations of MRJ packings. So there was a conjecture that Frank Stillinger and I had in a paper where we were studying density fluctuations in these packings. Not necessarily these packings, a much more general setting. And there's a concept called hyperuniformity, which means that you have the infinite wavelength fluctuations vanish identically. So with lattice packings, it's easy to get that. It's hard to get that with random packings. And we conjectured that if the packing was hyperuniform and also saturated, which means that you cannot add a particle to the system. Okay, that they were that the MRJ packing was in fact saturated and hyperuniform. Well, what we did was we actually did simulations and verified that. Interesting behavior is that for large R, you get a quasi long range behavior tail in the pair correlation function, which translates into the structure factor being proportional to K, that it is non-analytic at the origin. So first of all, it is saturated and it's hyperuniform. It is non-analytic at the origin, which is not expected if you look at a fluid. It's K squared, okay, an equilibrium system. And then it turns out that this is exactly the same kind of spectrum that is seen in the, well, it was modeled for the early universe, the early density fluctuations called the Harrison-Zildovich spectrum. And in a paper by Gabrielli et al., they referred to this as a glass of universe. Well, here is a glass. Here's a very specific construction that has that property. Now let me say something about maximally dense packings. In two dimensions, the solution is very simple. We all know it's a triangular lattice. And in three dimensions, we all know that the best way to stack oranges, you could ask your grocer, it's the FCC. But what about dimension greater than three? What about polydispersity? What about other particle shapes? And is the FCC crystal the densest? And in the paper that Paul was referring to, we found, in fact, that you can get ellipsoidal crystal structures that have a density of 77%. So this is now the record for the densest packing of ellipsoids. The basic idea, I really have to go through this quickly, and I apologize. This is just to give you an idea. This is the FCC packing arrangement. So take this square here, and instead put an ellipsoid of aspect ratio B over A, okay? And instead of now, so the first layer is just like just an affine transformation of that sphere packing. And then in the second layer, instead of stacking in the same direction, I'm going to stack orthogonally. And then I repeat that, A, B, A, B. And if you plot now, this is the FCC point, and if you move off of it, you can go in both directions. You increase until you reach this magic number, which has an aspect ratio of the square root of 3, and 1 over the square root of 3, and then you can go beyond that and keep that square root of 3. Unlike circles, which would be strictly jammed, you could actually shear the densest ellipsoid ellipse packing, which would be the affine transformation of the circle packing. So again, orientational degrees of freedom are very interesting, and that would be an interesting thing to do, is to study the flow of M&Ms. Ulam conjectured in 1972, among all densest packing of convex congruent objects in 3D, sphere gives the lowest packing density. So when I heard this, the most natural object to try to come up with a counterexample is the regular tetrahedron, because that doesn't fill space. And I don't have time to get into this. The best Bravais lattice packing is 36%. Conway had a packing that's 70%. I have a packing that's around 72%. Okay, that is that. And now let me, in the last remaining moments, let me tell you about this 100-year-old result. Okay, so this is joint work with Frank Stillinger. So this is work in progress. So why do you want to study packings in high dimensions? Well, first of all, understanding optimal packings has implications in packings in high D has implications for ground state. And as well, we can get insights into low dimensions. I mean, physicists do this all the time. In communications, it's the best way, actually, to send a digital code over a noisy channel. It corresponds to the densest sphere packing in a high-dimensional space. Discrete geometry, of course, people in mathematics have been interested in this a long time. String theory, it turns out there's a special dimension, dimension 8, where this is relevant. I have no idea what this is about. Why am I interested in it? Because it's fun. That's the basic reason why I'm interested in these high-dimensional packings. This is the hypercubic lattice in any dimension. And the thing that you want to note is this scales with the gamma function, which you can think of as being a factorial, right? A d over 2 factorial in even dimensions. This is for the simple cubic, and then the generalization of that for the FCC is the checkerboard lattice. Okay? It's called the checkerboard lattice. I have no time to tell you what that is. Just believe me that it's the generalization of FCC. There is a slight difference. You get a better power than you do for the simple cubic. But the point is that in 3 and 4 and 5 dimensions, these are supposed to be the best known packings. But it turns out that those packings will become inefficient at high enough dimension. So here's the result of Minkowski. Minkowski said the maximal density of a lattice packing of congruent spheres in RD and D dimensions, for D greater than or equal to 2, satisfies this inequality, lower bound. This is the Riemann zeta function. And all you really need to know for that is that that goes to 1 very quickly. And the most important factor is 2 to the D minus 1. So in the last 100 years, there have been no improvements, exponential improvements, that is, on this dominant 2 to the minus D. So we want to be able to lower the coefficient that sits out in front of D. This shows you the Minkowski bound. This is the simple cubic lattice in any dimension. This is phi times 2 to the D. You see that simple cubic goes to 0 very quickly, crosses the Minkowski bound. Checkerboard lattice also quickly dissipates. So it turns out Bravais lattices are not good packers in sufficiently high dimensions. Okay. So now let me tell. So let me. This obviously, I'm not going to have time to tell you about the basic result, but I at least want to give you the flavor for what we did. So this goes back to a paper that we wrote innocuously in the Journal of Physical Chemistry. Now it turns out that if you have a point process, a necessary condition for the existence of that point process is that the pair correlation function is non-negative, and that the structure factor is non-negative. Those are necessary conditions. What we did was we said, okay, let's maximize the density for a hypothetical test function, G2, pair correlation function, that's non-negative and that obeys the non-negativity condition. And let's see how high we can push the density. We're going to call that the terminal density. Now, if this hypothetical test function corresponds to a packing, then we automatically have a lower bound. That's the idea. And what we could show is that you actually have disordered packings that will beat these ordered packings in sufficiently high dimensions. And let me just show, I'm going to go right to the result because I have no time to tell you about it. This, maybe I'll just tell you what the test function was. It was this. So you have a delta function which will give you contacts. That's important. And then you have a gap and then a flat step function. Okay. And it turns out, so here's a table where these are the optimized parameters, and the only thing to pay attention to is this one, right? And this is in dimension 200. This sounds ridiculous to physicists, right? In dimension 200, you get 5.66 times 10 to the minus 44. But look at the average contact number. Okay. There's a lot of space, a lot of empty space in very high dimensions. And it turns out that the disordered packing is probably going to point the direction to the densest packings in very high dimensions. So just to show you, this curve here is the plot of the numerical work that we did. This is the best packing known in that dimension. So if you go to Conway's book, this is the dimension 56. And then quickly, in dimension 60, our lower bound estimate starts to surpass the best lattice packing. And you could also do asymptotics, exact asymptotics. This involves Bessel functions of arbitrary order. And the only thing I want to point out is that the answer seems to be 1 over 2 to the 0.778 times D. And that's the improvement that we get over Minkowski. Thanks for your attention. Yeah, that's a great question. So now I will be able to answer that in some detail. The short version, okay. I'll give you the short version. Oh, wait a minute. I want to put this up, too. Thank my collaborators, of course, National Science Foundation. And here's a random, if you're interested in random things, this is a random selection of a book about random things. Okay, so going back, I didn't tell you about the conjecture, which this rests on. Okay. First of all, we're going to define, for the purposes of this, to limit our class of test functions, we're going to be looking at test functions that decay to unity faster than 1 over r to the d. Okay? That's how we're going to define a disordered packing. And here's the conjecture. A hardcore non-negative temper distribution, G2, is a pair correlation function of a translationally invariant disordered sphere packing in RD at number density rho for sufficiently large d if and only if this condition is obeyed. And we have a lot of evidence to support that. I have disordered sphere packings that I can construct and show you that that happens. We have actual simulations that show that some of the other necessary conditions that I haven't described to you actually quickly recede into the sunset in dimension 2 and lower. I'm sorry, 2 and higher. Yeah. Subject to this, yes. Subject to this. Yeah. And sufficiently fast decay. Now, so the point that I wanted to raise, that I, if I could, just to answer, just to give an intuition why this works, why this probably is true. This is a very reasonable one to assume, right? This is just the step function for the pair correlation function. Now, this is exact for an equilibrium system in the dilute limit. But now, what I'm going to ask is, if I put this into the non-negativity condition, what do I get? Well, in this case, you get 1 over 2 to the d. Now, I can show that there are packings in which this is realized. So that's not even an issue. So now that I have established that this is realizable in high dimensions, let's see how well this does compared to the checkerboard. Now, if you compare the ratio of the cumulative coordination number just up to the distance, the square root of 3. So I'm just going out 3 shells, which would correspond to the FCC, the square root of 3, right? And then I'm going to see also, according to this formula, how many spheres it would correspond to for this flat step function. Look at the ratio. And this is in 100 dimensions. This ratio is 10 to the 13th. The reason why it's so astronomically much larger is because this piece, okay, which is 1 from here to here, accumulates an incredible number because that's being multiplied by x to the d minus 1. And so because I have continuous values from 1 to the square root of 3, I pick up an enormous number of spheres in that very small shell compared to the checkerboard lattice. So that's why things that are flat like this, and of course more sophisticated ones like the one I showed you, probably are very good packings. Now, John Conway at Princeton actually believes, just intuition, that the packings in high dimensions are truly disordered. So Paul was talking about finding disordered packings that are denser than the crystal packings. Well, here could be a situation where that may occur. It's an open question. What's the lowest dimension of the crossover from what to what?
Where in what dimension will the disordered packing become eventually?
Well, I mean, the only evidence that we have for that is that plot I showed you. That's the only evidence that we have right now. But you could find periodic packings maybe that would beat it. Now, periodic, what I mean by that is not a Bravais lattice. Say you have some basis in the unit cell. You might be able to find packings in 56 that would beat the currently best known one. But I have no doubts that no matter what Bervais lattice you choose, okay, which is what a mathematician calls a lattice, that in sufficiently high dimensions, a disordered one will beat it. Yeah, I mean, if you want to go on that basis, roughly, yeah. I'm not. Excuse me? Oh, okay. So basically you have, let's say you want to send an 8-digit code, okay, with some numbers, right, in those places. So that's going to be an 8-dimensional discrete space, number one. Okay. And it turns out if you have a noisy channel, you want to be able to send them so that you can distinguish different coordinates in this 8-dimensional space, okay, so that you don't confuse the signals at the other end. So what you want to be able to do is you want to be able to place them within some minimum distance of one another. In addition, you want to use the least amount of power, which means you want to stack them as closely as possible to the origin. No, it's not clear that that's going to be the case. The reason is that the curvature deviations from the sphere are nonlinear effects, okay? And we believe, at least this is our current thinking, that that's going to remain. And I should have mentioned, I didn't because I went through it quickly, the number of contacts in the case of that dense crystal packing was 14, as opposed to 12 that you get in the FCC. Okay, so you had 14 contacts in that case.